Thank you for making Wisconsin Public Radio a part of your day and for your support of things we like to do, like what's commencing right now, Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Howdy, everybody. This week, some young movie makers return to their roots to offer a premiere. It's called Fragments. It's showing in downtown Eau Claire this weekend. We welcome Mac Hastings and Ben Kreibich. Another Eau Claire native who's done well in places where TV and motion picture production is the norm, Patrick O'Brien, returns to direct and appear at the Grand Theater this weekend. Jim Oliver shares their conversation. We'll talk with Michael Sandvig and Carrie White. Through music, art, and literature, they're helping bring hope and renewal to prison inmates.
May the road rise to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the sun shine warm.
Singing, we all do it in the shower, along with what's playing in the car, humming something while we work. Well, the Northern Lights Chorus is a feature of the Dunn County chapter of the Barbershop Harmony Society. They want you to get to know their craft and even consider joining the fun. Ambassadors for this conversation are Pat Mulheron and Tom LeClaire, who begins with a bit of history.
It's about 50 years old, the chapter itself. It started out in Menominee, and then it moved because of the geographical location of the members. It went to Bloomer for a while and then wound up in Colfax, and it's been there for the last 45 years or so.
I understand that there are 17 districts of the Barbershop Harmony Society.
Well, yes, there are 17 districts nationally, and then there are a few what they call affiliate districts, such as Australia, Great Britain, Ireland, and so forth.
Okay. I got a kick out of the fact that the district in which we sit is called LOL, which, of course, is something that's very popular with people who text nowadays. Of course, it stands for Laugh Out Loud, but, of course, this stands for Land O' Lakes. Wisconsin is lumped with Upper Michigan, Minnesota, North Dakota, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Ontario. Are there district conventions? Do you guys get to go to any of those?
Oh, yes, there are district conventions. There's two a year. And we get to go to them if it's convenient.
Uh-huh.
It's something that we really enjoy because we get to see other singers, other barbershoppers from all over the district.
Yeah. So all of these places that I mentioned, have they moved those conventions around? You've been to Canada and all over?
Oh, yes. They've been all over. Most recently, though, it's been pretty well in either Mankato or Rochester because of the facilities available, hotels and motels available, and a venue, which we need a rather large auditorium.
Tell me a little bit more about the Dunn County chapter. How many active members do you have, and how fluid is that?
Pat, you could take that one.
Well, I tell you what, we have currently about 31 or 32 members at this time. About 28 to 30 members are actually on the risers every Tuesday evening for rehearsals. It's a great hobby for everybody, and I encourage everyone that likes to sing to come and join us.
Yeah, and we'll tell people how to do that in a minute. I still want to talk a little bit about the history of it. As a member, you said you have 31, 32 active members of the Dunn County chapter at the moment, and of course, they sing regularly in the Northern Lights Chorus. How is it determined that quartets are formed? Is that just something that guys get together in the corner of the room and say, let's do that, or how do quartets get together?
We have a program called, the Bloomer Bash. We get together in Bloomer at some place up there. It varies where we go. Mm-hmm. And we just try out various combinations of guys and see what sounds pretty good. And mine formed because four of us got together up there, and we thought we sounded pretty good. So we did form. We were called Dunn 4, D-U-N-N 4.
Sure. Yeah,
But we weren't done for, but we were rather old.
Yeah.
And we sang together for about 7 years, and we just thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. We broke up when our lead singer moved to Michigan. We started getting other people in there, into the quartet and substituting, and then another one passed away, and the Done For Quartet is still going, but none of the original four of us is singing at all with that quartet.
Mm-hmm. So when you get a quartet together, are you autonomous? In other words, you are your own little entity? You rehearse whenever you want, perform whenever you want. You don't have to go through the chapter, or how does that work?
That's it. We're pretty much on our own. The only time that my quartet was part of the chapter when we were out performing was during the Valentine's Day program. So any monies we made, we put right back into the chapter. It was a chapter activity. Otherwise, the gigs that we had, we were on our own. We arranged our own, and we did sing on our own at various events.
That's the voice of Tom LeClair. On another phone line is Pat Mulheron, and we're talking about barbershop singing. The Northern Lights Chorus has some events coming up, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. I love the fact that this came up because I've had the opportunity to research it all. I wondered if it got its name by people actually singing in barbershops. I didn't find documentation that happened, but, you know, I guess via the name, they must have done that at one time.
Historically speaking, barbershop goes back. Actually, it was started by the African Americans, and they seemed to have a natural talent for harmony, mm-hmm. and they were associated with barbershops. Usually, that's where they met. This is way back. I'm talking Civil War and prior to that. And it evolved then into the current organization when a gentleman named O.C. Cash from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, got a bug in his ear that he wanted to sing a little bit of close harmony, as we do a cappella. He invited several of his friends to meet in a hotel in Oklahoma City, and he expected 10 or 12 to show up, and there were over 20 did show up. Hmm. And that's what really started it. And the name of the society at that time was SPEBQSA, SPEBSQUAS, the Society for the Preservation and Encouragement of Barbershop Quartet Singing in America. Mm-hmm. And legally, it's still SPEBSQUAS. However, we're now known as the Barbershop Harmony Society.
You know, that word preservation sticks out to me because, of course, you can tell that a lot of the barbershop groups are aging. I noted on the Barbershop Harmony Society website, they have a section called Next Generation Barbershop. So there is a movement, and there has to be a movement, to keep it going with younger generations. How's that going within the Dunn County chapter?
Our youngest member is a junior in high school.
Well, there you go.
We had a member once that was 9 years old. You know, he became interested in other things, such as girls and athletics and that, and he just went on. But he was with us a couple of years. Uh-huh. But right now we have only one young one, but we're actively working on that. We're spending time out at, especially at high schools, with the music department, so trying to encourage young people to come and do our hobby, which
sure.
is singing.
Yeah.
You know, one thing unique about the singing, it's almost impossible to be angry at anything when you're singing.
Yeah, I did notice a lot of smiles on people's faces.
Oh, yes.
As they were singing. So, Pat Mulheron, because you and I set this all up, tell our audience what's happening on Tuesday evening, January 30th in Menominee, because it actually segues into what we've just been talking about with Tom, and that is getting people interested and happy about barbershop singing. What's going on?
Well, we have a great opportunity for any man of any age to experience the four-part harmony. It's fun. Everybody can do it. We're getting together at the Off-Broadway Banquet Room right next to the Stout Ale House in Menominee mm-hmm. on January 30th and 7 to 9. We're going to have people there to help train us in four-part harmony, and we'll have a sing-along so everybody can feel free to join in on any one of the four parts. We'll have some entertainment by the Northern Lights Chorus. And the Chips. Some of you know of the Chips Quartet. They've been around for a while. And some local quartets as well. Having a good time that evening. And it's all free, of course. It's free admission. It's an opportunity for you to come and bring your spouse or another friend along with you and join in on the fun.
Again, that's January 30th, 7 to 9 p.m., Off-Broadway Banquet Room, Stout Ale House. That is in Menominee. You said bring spouses along. Is there a Sweet Adelines faction to your deal or not?
Actually, it's a separate entity.
Oh, it is. Okay.
They do rehearse on the same evening as the Dunn County Barbershoppers because
okay.
a lot of those spouses are a member of our Dunn County chapter.
Well, I hope you get a good turnout. Coming in April, that's down the road. We'll talk about that between now and then. You have another big show, a 49th annual Harmony show coming up. And we'll give people details of that, as I said, as that nears. One other thing I wanted to mention while I have you guys on the phone is Valentine's Day can be special thanks to barbershoppers. Tell me about that.
Well, every year we go out on Valentine's Day with mostly two or three quartets. Tuxedo clad. We're out there to serenade your sweetheart. We get reservations. We come in and sing a couple of songs. We give the sweetheart a card, a beautiful rose, and and then we have a keepsake photo that we'll take right there on the site and give that to them as well right then.
So now everybody's interest is piqued and they say, I want that done. How do they get that done? They go to your website? What do they do?
Well, you can go on to our website, dcbarbershop.org.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, people will call at 715-962-3038. And we'll have someone set the schedule up so that we can come at a convenient time.
Sounds like you guys have a lot of fun, and we'll be talking about it between now and April to make sure that people know about that event as well. Tom LeClaire and Pat Mulheron from the Dunn County Chapter of the Barbershop Harmony Society, the Northern Lights Chorus, and several quartets. Thank you guys for being with us here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Keep singing.
Well, thanks for having us.
Repeating the phone number for sending your own personal singing Valentine, it's 715-962-3038. That's 3038. And again, the website is dcbarbershop.org. You're listening to Spectrum West on WPR. Thanks so much for doing so. Coming up, a movie made around here, plays around here. Patrick O'Brien talks with Jim Oliver. And now, how often does it happen? You go through life day in, day out, all the while things happening around you, many of them very impressive. 513 Free is one such adventure. Now, I'm not a religious guy, but I do appreciate the inspirational capacity it can have in life for both giver and receiver. Giving and receiving goes on in a big way within the concept of 513 Free, and now the Penn Project and Art by Inmates. It's a growing ministry that works to break the cycle of incarceration through spiritual and creative endeavor. It's based in Eau Claire, and we had the opportunity to talk to principals Michael Sandvig and Carrie White on the road. Well, we'll never, in our limited space, get to all you are and all we'd like to ask about. So let's make good use of the time we have. Michael, okay. Cliff's Notes, definition of 513 Free.
Yes, 513 Free comes from our name, comes from a Bible verse, Galatians 5:13. You, my brothers, are called to be free, but do not use your freedom for your own selfish nature. Rather, serve one another in love. And so we've been an organization for about 10 years, started actually as a musical group. So we started out as a band, and we spent a lot of time in places that were forgotten, like homeless shelters and rehab centers. We would do free concerts. Also, we would do free concerts throughout the community. And just kind of through 10 years of doing that, we've just kind of evolved and have started a bunch of different things. And so in 2010, I think we went to our first prison. And so then we started doing music inside of prisons. And then from there, as we've spent more and more time in prisons, we've just seen more and more of a need to do other things other than music.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's actually how Penn Project started, was out of going inside of prisons, meeting men and women behind bars, seeing the talent they have, and so just finding different ways to really share the gospel. That's really at our heart through what we're doing.
It's almost like we set this all up beforehand, like we choreographed it, because you brought up the Penn Project, and now I'm going to ask Carrie for a concise overview of what that is.
All right. The Penn Project kind of grew out of this need from the inmates to access lyrics of 513 Free's.
Mm-hmm.
And that very simple thing kind of grew into realizing that they needed a platform to share testimonies, write devotionals, share their artwork, poetry, letters to their family. So it grew into a magazine, and alongside the logo are the words faith, art, and purpose.
Okay.
And that really encompasses everything that it is. When the inmates contribute to it, they are sharing their stories in really impactful ways. And the way the magazine is designed and printed is very relevant. We were very careful with the design. And so when they receive it, it really speaks value into who they are as artists and as individuals and as children of God. So that's the pen project.
Okay, yeah. So it's a magazine. It's both printed form and digital online?
Yep, there are online versions on the website.
Okay, so how often does this come out?
On average, it's about twice a year. Fluctuates yeah. based on, you know, the submissions that we get.
And now from another cubbyhole within the 513 Free, lack of a better word, empire, something called Art by Inmates. Through February 15th, there's an exhibit at the Heide Center in Chippewa Falls. Is that perceived as part of the Penn Project, or is that just another one of these things that came to mind and let's do that too?
Yeah.
Art by Inmates developed out of all the submissions that the Penn Project has received. So there were about 100 pieces that were on display at the gallery called Art by Inmates.
Okay, and Michael, it's at the Heide Center now, as I said. Is it going to go other places after that?
It's definitely our hope to be more like active in the community and do those types of things, like art galleries of what's going on. I would just say like what I've seen taken from this art exhibit, Art by Inmates, has just been a lot of times the community doesn't really know what happens when an individual goes into prison or when they are incarcerated. Often we hear why they've gotten arrested and maybe why they've gone in, but then from there it's like what happens. And so I think it's just been really cool just for me to see through this art gallery. It really just shows the community like that inmates are humans, that a lot mm-hmm. of individuals that have been like locked up inside a prison, that they have changed. Because often the person that goes inside a prison isn't necessarily the same person when they get out. And mm-hmm. so this has been like, what I've just seen is there definitely is that need just to show the community that, you know, there is life change that can happen.
And
I would say that's our hope moving forward.
Part of the gallery was we had an evening where one of the artists who had contributed a large portion of the submissions was there that night because he's been released from prison. And so we had a Q&A on stage where he got to answer questions that talked about what life was like inside prison, how his life transformation happened, how he got interested in art and how he developed those talents, and now how he's using his talents to encourage others.
Okay.
So it's been really neat. Like, and that's part of the, you know, doing future galleries. It really brings awareness to the people, because they're people, they have talents and they have potential. So there's definitely a hope to have future galleries.
The voice of Carrie White, and she's on one phone. Michael Sandvig is on another phone, and they are talking to me from Nashville, Tennessee, because they're on a prison tour, and the subject is 513 Free. We have defined that for you. Guys, I'm going to be painfully honest. I've been known to have skepticism for things and people who approach carrying Bible verses and answered prayers. And I entered my research on this with some of that cynicism intact. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the deeper I went, the deeper you guys became. I watched Brian Cole's story. I was compelled to become an admirer of his. I watched other videos. And the music video of The Weight of It All, that's pretty cool, found myself believing in your belief. The other thing that struck me was the eloquence of the inmates as they told their stories. Revelations, to use a biblical term, you might like that.
Mm-hmm.
revelations like that must serve as very pleasant aspects of what you guys do.
Absolutely. That's like a huge moment to rejoice in when we hear that people have, you know, heard the music of 513 Free or been to an event or read through the Penn Project and have said, wow, my faith was deepened in hearing the testimony through your music and the art.
How about revelations like the eloquence of the inmates that I spoke of? That has to be enlightening for you too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Seeing, you know, when we get submissions, seeing that there's transformation happening there. is a beautiful, beautiful part of the organization and what we do.
Yeah, and I was just going to, like, echo what Carrie was saying is, you know, when I first started going into prison with 513, I necessarily didn't know always what to expect. Like, you know, who are the individuals we're going to meet? You know, what are they going to be like? And I just remember my world even just being rocked, like, wow, you know, like I see my brother, I see my father here just in a sense of, like, mm-hmm. these are humans that maybe have made a bad mistake and have mm-hmm. gotten themselves into prison. But I just was open. My eyes were open to, wow, like, people can change because I haven't yes. necessarily always, like, made that connection. I've always, you know, kind of been maybe skeptical, too, of what does that actually look like. And so actually seeing and witnessing mm-hmm. Someone going into prison and then their life changing, and then when they get out, you know, like, their life is still changed, that has just been mm-hmm. a really cool thing. And you mentioned, like, Brian Cole and seeing his story, and that's just, like, one individual that I just see often where I'm just like, you know, I see that same story throughout people
True.
With me.
Well, you guys go to great lengths, and because of that effort, they turn out to be meaningful lengths to promote the ways that people and faith can help. I know that you're not 100% effective. There are those who can't get off the road they're on, but it's
Right.
those to whom you are effective that matter, and I have a feeling that you guys probably don't give up on anybody.
No, absolutely not. And because God doesn't give up on people, and we've seen that time and time again.
How about plans? Are you expand? Well, you're obviously expanding because you started out, you know, around Western Wisconsin, and you've moved around Wisconsin and the Midwest, and now you're in Tennessee. You're expanding your boundaries, obviously.
We are, and so as we started these other things, they're just growing so fast. We're actually realizing that something like the Penn Project, which is currently under 513, needs to almost be its own thing. Carrie and Chad, they're married, and they're actually going to be taking over the Penn Project.
For 513 Free to really focus on music and do it well, the organization as a whole kind of came to this conclusion that the Penn Project should maybe become its own nonprofit. So we are currently in the process of establishing it as a nonprofit. Our hope in that is to bring awareness to the Penn Project, not in a new way, but just to really focus, you know, as a local community in Eau Claire in the Chippewa Valley,
mm-hmm.
So that the people of our own community can say, yeah, the Penn Project is an impactful tool and it calls Eau Claire, Wisconsin home. We're really excited to kind of drum up that excitement.
Well, I feel bad that we've only been able to scratch the tip of your big iceberg, but I hope we'll be able to talk as time goes on with your growth, because you include things like youth mentorship and many other things that we can talk about
yeah.
possibly in the future. I do congratulate you guys on your commitment and your compassion and also on your professionalism, meaning from where I stand, you guys are doing things right, and I wish you many more successes. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Thank you so much.
If people want to learn more, they can go to 513free.com.
Good. Get back on the road.
Awesome. Thank you.
Sounds good.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Sit back and just relax and take a deep breath, because what I'm about to say has been weighing on my chest. If I don't get it out, I'm afraid I might digress. No, I'm not suicidal, but sometimes I get depressed. And there are days I wish that I could climb in someone else's mind so I could see the world I know through a different set of eyes. But I would quickly settle for a little bit of hope that in the end, when I die, I won't die alone. All the weight of it all. All the weight of it all.
Little 513 Free there for you. The weight of it all. That's good stuff. Next up, Jim Oliver with Patrick O'Brien on acting, a homecoming, and more on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Marquardt Toyota with the all-wheel drive RAV4, an SUV committed to reliability. Marquardt Toyota is located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or marquardttoyota.com. One of Eau Claire's favorite sons, a guy who's put the city on the map as a place where artists are encouraged, nourished, and then shared with the big wide world. Well, let's allow Jim Oliver to make the introduction.
Whisper Into My Good Ear. It's a one-act play written by William Hanley. The play is directed by Eau Claire native Patrick O'Brien, and it features two old homeless men sitting on a park bench. The play will run for two performances, Friday and Saturday, January 26th and 27th, at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. And here to talk about Whisper Into My Good Ear is the aforementioned director and also one of the actors, Patrick O'Brien. And I'm getting the impression that they don't just sit on the park bench.
Well, they do sit on a park bench, but they're not homeless. They have this old hotel for, the old pensioners back in the 60s take place in the early 60s that they live in. So they do have a place to rest their head.
That's comforting to know. Yeah. Well, tell us about these two old guys who actually aren't homeless.
Opposites attract. So, one guy, the guy that I play, is quite introverted. Mm-hmm. Keeps things close to the vest. He has some secrets. And the other guy is an extrovert, which is a good thing. You don't want two introverts on stage on a park bench just kind of trying to avoid eye contact and not talking. So, the one guy, Charlie, he keeps the dialogue moving pretty much. He has probably the 75% of the lines. Yeah. But they're opposites, but they have a common goal, which I really can't divulge because that would kind of
gives up the story in a way. We'll try not to do that. Well, who's the other actor? I almost forgot to ask.
Name is Larry Ripp.
Okay,
he's an old pal. We go way back to 1979 or 1980 back in the Twin Cities. Yeah.
Now the show was done at the Fringe Festival in Minneapolis, or the Minnesota Fringe Festival, I guess.
Last year, we've done it in a few Fringe Festivals, though. Mm-hmm. We did it in the first time was the Indianapolis Fringe Festival, and then we did it at the London Fringe Festival. Full disclosure, that's London, Ontario, but it's a nice Fringe Festival.
Sure.
And in D.C., Washington, the Capital Fringe.
Oh. Okay.
And then last summer, we took it.
Okay. Here. Why don't you tell us just what does this Fringe Festival stuff mean?
Good question. It's kind of a new phenomenon. Well, not new, but it's a burgeoning phenomenon, let me put it that way. Decades ago, the dinner theater thing was kind of the thing that was kind of saving live theater. Mm-hmm. And now Fringe Festivals are springing up all over the United States and Canada. It started back in Edinburgh, Scotland, with the original Fringe Festival. Generally, they're short plays. Most Fringe Festivals insist that you be under an hour. And they tend to be plays that don't get produced, off the wall, avant-garde. And there's a lot of stand-up comedians who do, or magicians who will do Fringe Festivals. So it's things that you normally wouldn't see at, for instance, the Guthrie or even the Chipper Valley Theater Guild, But actually, this play, Whisper Into My Good Ear, is a little conventional for a Fringe Festival.
Now, you don't just walk in the door at a Fringe Festival and say, well, here we are, we're going to start our show.
You have to apply, and most Fringe Festivals have more applications than the slots they have available, so they'll have a lottery. Mm-hmm. I'm 0-5 this year so far with lotteries. I have missed out on quite a few of them, which is kind of rare. Usually I get in.
Well, I read some reviews of your show from the Fringe Festival in Minnesota this past year. One of them I thought was kind of interesting. It said, if you ever taken an acting class, the first thing you learn that acting is reacting. The show is a master class on that lesson. Lawrence and Pat are able to create a beautiful world for themselves simply by sitting on a bench and listening to each other. I haven't seen the play, but I guess the action is devoted to two guys talking to each other. So what are the challenges in holding an audience's interest in such a situation?
Well, you just kind of have to rely on the script. The first time we did it, I came into it like that. I was thinking, for the first 40 minutes of it, not much happens. They're just kind of setting the stage for what happens later. And I was really worried that we're going to lose the audience, but I was very pleased that there were plenty of laughs. There is humor in it. And the audience, sometimes audiences just kind of collectively decide if it's funny or not. Even if you're trying to be funny, they just kind of decide and they're not going to laugh. Or other times they think, this is a comedy, and they do laugh. Well, fortunately, that first audience in Indianapolis thought it was funny. So we got a lot of laughs. But then when it got serious, toward the end, it was pin drop quiet. So you just have to rely on the script, like that review said. Just listen to each other and trust that it's good theater that you're doing. It's a worthwhile script.
Sure. He is Patrick O'Brien, who is director of Whisper Into My Good Ear, which will play January 26th and 27th, Friday and Saturday, at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. William Hanley wrote a number of plays, but I mostly found out that his commercial success largely came in television. So,
yeah.
So what attracted you to the play to begin with?
Actually, Larry Ripp, the other actor in the play, gave it to me. And I didn't like it when he first gave it to me. But he said, no, this would be good for a Fringe Festival. And I said, well, I don't know. And then I just put it aside. And then William Hanley, like 5 years ago, died. Mm. So I picked the script again and read it again and liked it more the second time through. But the ending just felt too abrupt. And I read a couple of reviews of previous productions of the show. Mm-hmm. And they both said that the ending, yes, just wasn't smooth. So I looked at it and I thought, man, if you took this speech and you put it up here and you just kind of cut and pasted this last minute and a half of the play, it would play much better. So I suggested that to Larry, who had done the play before. Mm-hmm. He had done it like 30 years ago, and now that he's old enough to actually do the roles, he wanted to do the show again. And he agreed that it would flow and make the ending more dramatic, so we changed it around. I don't think Mr. Hanley would object too much that we did it. You know, we didn't rewrite it anything. We just kind of cut and pasted. So we decided to go through with it, and I'm glad we did.
According to your biography, you were a graduate of Regis High School and the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire.
Yep.
So tell us how you landed in professional theater.
Well, I think we can go back even further, actually. The beginnings at St. James, the greater Catholic school. I think it was being an altar boy. Yeah, I couldn't wait. I mean, there were no outlets, really, you know, to do kid acting. There was no children's theater or community theater even in Eau Claire back then.
Yeah.
So there wasn't much, but I always wanted to do it. And being an altar boy, I mean, you had it all. I mean, you had lines and a costume and blocking and props and an audience and the star of the show, the priest, and the almighty critic up above, you know. I mean, sure. You had everything. Mm-hmm. So I think that was my start in the fifth grade, Sister Felix.
Yeah. So did you study theater at the university?
Yeah, I couldn't decide on a major. It took me 6 years to get through. I worked my way through, and I couldn't decide on a major for a long time. I was going to go into education, special ed. But then I just landed this really good role, and the guy who directed it said, hey, you might want to consider, you know. So I considered, became a theater major, and... But even after that, even I graduated, I didn't think I was going to ever make a living at it, you know. But I did. I haven't had an honest job for about 35 years now.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Now, you've done a lot of work around the Twin Cities. You've also been in, for want of a better term, Hollywood.
I had 22 years out there.
So what brought you back to the Twin Cities? That seems to me the holy grail is going to Hollywood.
Well, I missed February back here. I missed the weather in February. No, I'm just kidding. But, well, I get asked that question a lot, and and I don't have a really good answer. There were a lot of small reasons why we moved back. I mean, my wife and I never planned on living 22 years in L.A. anyway. Mm-hmm. We actually met on the East Coast. But I don't know. My mother was in failing health, and so we kind of moved back and stayed with her some. And one of our kids needed a change of venue, if you catch my drift. We don't have to delve into that.
Yeah,
but,
but
to be honest, you know, we were here for a couple of months, and we both looked at each other and said, this was a mistake. We both miss L.A. and our former life. But, it's working out okay. The kids have adapted well here, so
good.
That's what's most important.
Well, according to your listing on, what is it, IMBD online, you still do some work out there.
No.
You do not? No.
No. Well, actually, I go out there every Christmas time. There's this old play called Bob's Holiday Office Party, and it's just a play, and it's been going on for 23 years now, and I go back and do a weekend of that with the old gang, mostly Minnesota, transplanted Minnesotans who put on this play, and kind of have a good time. But I mean, did you see some recent films or something?
That there was some stuff listed. I didn't look that carefully at the dates and all that.
Yeah, those are things that were done in the Twin Cities, some films.
And, It seemed like every time your name comes up, then they always happen to say, well, he is best known for playing
Mr. Dewey from Saved by the Bell.
Yeah. You weren't in that program all that long, were you?
Well, I only had like 5 episodes of it.
That's what I thought. I thought, gee whiz, he must have been a main character. I never saw the show, I'm sorry.
But yeah, no, you don't need to apologize. No, I'm amazed that it's still a thing.
It still seems to be your calling card for some
and
reason.
There was a restaurant in Chicago, a pop-up restaurant, they call them, and it was a Saved by the Bell restaurant. And so I went down there and did appearances. And it was so successful, the guy moved it to Los Angeles. It's opening up in March in Los Angeles, right in the heart of Hollywood. And, I'm going to go out there and do some appearances for that. So it's still, you know, amongst the, from 30 to, like, 40 is kind of the wheelhouse for Saved by the Bell fans. And they're still crazy about it, oddly enough.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. It's good to have something to tack onto your name, I suppose.
It's my claim to fame, and I'm going to make the most of it, I guess. Yeah. Okay.
Well, the play we're actually talking about is Whisper Into My Good Ear. It'll play Friday and Saturday, January 26th and 27th at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. We've been talking to the director and one of the actors, Patrick O'Brien, the native of Eau Claire. For ticket information, contact the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild at 715-832-PLAY. Or online at www.cbtg.org. Patrick, thanks so much for coming to talk to us.
Tell them Tweet sent you.
Tweet sent you.
That's what I was known as back in the day in Eau Claire. Yeah.
Okay.
That was before Tweet was a thing. But that was my own thing. But that was my nickname.
You were Tweet. Okay. Well,
even the nuns and priests called me Tweet. It was kind of weird. Yeah.
But, good to know. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Might have opened a new can of worms there. Thanks, Jim, and Tweet. Spectrum West on WPR. Good to be here. Here's a Spectrum memo for you. The Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra presents the annual concert for family and friends, Saturday, 2 p.m. Grace Lutheran Church in Eau Claire. Tickets at Festival Foods, Neff's Pianos, and probably at the door, I would think. Right now, here's an excerpt from the first episode of Fragments. It's a scene where actors Alex Rainey and Ben Kreibich portray two young people about to endure a fairly lame music therapy session in a stark institution. Let's listen.
Yeah, I think the worst part is like how powerless we are in here. Like they took my phone away. I can't review this place on Yelp.
Dude, do you need internet access?
Yeah.
I can get you internet access.
For real?
Yeah, dude.
That's dope. That's
tomorrow,
amazing.
Art therapy.
This place is getting skewered online.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Just one day, you can't help but you just start slamming your head into a wall and can't stop. Kind of warrants a trip here, I guess.
Yeah. Or like one day you find some pills and it's like, it's been a bad day. You take a few of them and that feels good. So then you take like 20 more. Next thing you know, you're passed out on the bathroom floor. Your grandpa's in there. He thinks you're dead. And you wake up to him, you know, just poking you with a broom. You get checked into the hospital.
Oh. Fragments is about fragments of specific lives, and it's dished out in fragments in a web series. But this weekend, it's coming in its entirety to the big screen in downtown Eau Claire. Ben Kreibich is the writer, and Mac Hastings, the producer. I should point out first that I'm an old dog. Old dogs, they have that challenge with new tricks. How does a web series differ from any of the other ways that independent filmmakers get their work exposed? I mean, there are several ways to air things today.
It just seemed like a more accessible thing that we could just get done. And so basically a web series is just an episodic, like a show, just shorter episodes, and then they're just released on YouTube. Another thing we thought about while doing it was a lot of people would be able to get their eyes on it without us having to do a bunch of screenings and press. When you put something out on the internet, it goes around, you know?
Yes, it does. It's been known to, yeah. Is there a certain quantitative research that you can do with that so you can tell how many people have seen it?
Yeah, well, it certainly is a little helpful. We want to know how many people are watching it, just like any YouTube video. To be honest, I don't know if we get more metrics than that, Nielsen rating or something. But sure. More than anything, we just want people to watch it. All sorts of people, I think, can enjoy this show for various reasons. So the more the merrier. We all have worked in various creative fields in the past, and we do want to make more of these in the future. We kind of view this first season, if you will, as like a pilot season, the way a TV show would have a single pilot episode. We're viewing this as a test run. Yeah, it's going great, and people seem excited about it, which is awesome.
We all know what the internet can do. I think the word is viral, isn't it?
Yeah, we want to go viral. Let me tell you, Al.
We really want to go viral.
Is there a word for the notch under viral?
That is a great question.
Like, there should be, because that's where we're at, I think.
Yeah, maybe it's bacterial.
Yeah, that's fun.
Okay, so now that we know what a web series is, let's talk about the genesis of Fragments. First, tell us the premise of the story. Ben, you're the writer, so that's probably your job.
Yep, that is my job. Basically, the show is about my life, truly. It's about me living with schizophrenia post-psychiatric treatment, and I meet a friend in the psych ward, and we meet outside when we both get out, and we just want to pursue our dreams and do something in spite of our illnesses. It's really about relationships, you know, having a partner, having friends, and trying to get stuff done, you know, get artwork going. And yeah, so it's just kind of about all that.
Is it totally fictional, or is there some nonfiction to this?
I would say most of it is actually nonfiction. I kind of wrote it as some stuff in my life was unfolding.
Okay.
But the funnier bits, I think, are the parts that are fictional, but they're all based on true stuff that has happened to me.
Okay. Well, so not to get too personal, but...
I don't mind.
Oh, okay.
I wrote a show about it.
Yes, you did. It's out there. Well, I don't want to get too deeply into it, but I guess my next question then would be, have you found it to be therapeutic, what you're doing?
That is a great question, Al. Yes, I have, especially acting in it was kind of difficult, but then watching it back at a different part in my life, I can feel good about where I'm at now and learn from my mistakes. And yeah, I can watch my life basically play out the way it did, and I can learn from that and just not make the same mistakes and try to do better.
Was there an epiphany moment whereby you said, I'm going through this stuff. This would make a cool miniseries or film or whatever. Was there a moment you said, yeah, I got to do this?
Actually, there was. I've been doing this sort of work for a couple years now with poetry. I've written a couple books in a similar fashion to what I was going through. So I've been doing that sort of thing for a while. But then there was one day, I think I was walking home from school, and I had a rough day. I just imagined a camera following me for some reason. I was like, you know, I think some of this stuff could make a good show. And I had written a couple scripts, and I thought, this could be good. This could be something. And I talked to Mac about it, and he agreed.
Is the film intended to have some social significance? Are you looking to open doors for other people?
Oh, absolutely. One of the main reasons I wanted to do it was to reduce stigma surrounding certain mental illnesses, especially schizophrenia. I think people are generally afraid of that sort of thing, but I'm truly just a very normal person with normal problems. A little quirky, but, you know, I'm not scary at all. So I really wanted to show people that you can be friends with people who have these illnesses, and it's fine, and they're usually great people.
Go figure. Quirky people in the film business? Ah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah. All right, so that's Mac. Now that we know how it all began and the storyline was developed, then came the job of putting the actors and the crew together. Producers usually have those organizational tasks. Ben said you thought it was a good idea, so then what happened?
Yeah, so Ben sent me a script for what ended up being the second episode of the show, which is called Release. And I read it, and I kind of read it as a standalone, almost short film, and just really liked it. Ben and I tossed around the idea of maybe doing something more episodic. And then from there, the scripts just kind of started to roll in. So my job was more or less to just put the team together of people who would work on this. We have a lot of friends who are very creative, hardworking people, so it was a very simple task. We got everybody we wanted to do this, so we didn't have to even make too big of like lists or anything like that, but we really took it on an episode by episode basis. We shot the show over the course of about 10 months, a lot of time between each shoot, which was just dedicated to rewrites, casting. That's where we did most of our casting. We didn't have a ton of time to rehearse on this project, so everything was done a little more on the fly, which I think gives it a fun energy. But yeah, as far as putting the team together, we've got our directors of photography, Jesse Johnson and Tim Schwagel, are friends of ours who we've worked with in various capacities for years. They have strengths that are different but kind of complement each other very well. Mm-hmm. So we knew right away those were the two we wanted to define the look of this show. And then as Ben and I kind of crafted more of a story, I think that's kind of the origin of it. Our other crew member, Alex Rainey, who is a writer from Eau Claire, Jesse and Tim from Eau Claire, were from Eau Claire.
The actors from Eau Claire.
It's pretty much all Eau Claire talent. Yeah, we live up in Minneapolis now, but it's hard to not work with our friends in Eau Claire.
Yes, it is. And we're thankful that you come back to thank do you. Those things, not just a visit. I mean, you're bringing product back.
And Yeah.
And that's cool. Good for you guys. That's Mac Hastings and Ben Krybik. They're on the phone from Minneapolis. We're on a blizzardy day. They were nice enough to move our interview up so that I can get home and shovel. The film is called Fragments, and it's interesting. I've seen at least four of the seven first season episodes. It's a web series, and at the end of this conversation, they will repeat how you can see it. Another way that you can see it is Saturday and Sunday in downtown Eau Claire at the Budget Cinema. I'm guessing you guys haven't seen it on the big screen. That's got to be something you're looking forward to.
Oh, I can't tell you how excited I am, Al. I'm a little nervous, but mostly excited.
The line that I read in the release that caught me warmly and made me think I should ask about it is new filmmakers finding their voice. That is you guys. So now that this Fragments, at least the first season, is in the can, I'm using movie terms just to
make that Hollywood lingo.
Yeah, sure. I want to make it seem like I know what I'm talking about. How have those voices of those new filmmakers changed now that you have your first seven episodes? And also, has it spawned appetite for more? Are you working on other stuff, or is the second season of Fragments the only thing that's on your mind right now?
Yeah, I think it definitely has inspired us to keep going both on this project and other ones. When we started, I don't think knew just how far into this world we wanted to get in to film and production and telling stories that way. I think we've all been involved in the process of storytelling in different ways, but this process really taught us a couple things. One, this is the medium in which we want to be telling stories, and two, we really like doing it together, this specific group of people. We're definitely going to take some time after this to try to shoot some other things. We already have a few scripts kind of in the process of getting finished, because we want to get into something as soon as possible and give people something more to look at and just to give us an opportunity to stretch a different muscle of our brain.
How far do you think you guys can go in your dreams on what is called zero budget? Fragments doesn't really have one.
Right, yeah. I think it would be nice to have a little bit of money if we were to do a second season of Fragments. I think we could do the same thing again, and it would be great, but it's a little stressful, and I think you look at what we did with no money, just think of what we could do with some money. Yeah.
Working with a budget always, I think, will be, in some capacity, the goal, just because it means you can pay people for their work.
Right.
And it's just easier to do good work if you're fed and, you know, financial things, and then there's certain budget things in terms of storytelling we just can't do without money. So certainly going forward, I think we'd like to start working with budgets, but this also taught us just have a good story. It's got to have heart more than a budget.
Does it appeal to you guys to eventually take anything that you produce to a film festival?
I've actually looked into some web series festivals, and I'm thinking about submitting fragments to a couple of different ones. We kind of want to take a fragments trip. I think that would be fun if we could get in somewhere. But definitely we've thought about it. That's kind of, I guess, one of the next steps after we get the first screening out of the way and start getting them online.
Another movie line is right place, right time.
Yep.
One of those investors might be out there, right place, right time, and say, hey, these are some creative young people.
Exactly. And that goes back to kind of the idea of shooting this and other stuff and being able to present our, I guess, as of now, unnamed production company or unit to people and just give them a body of work that they can look at.
So what are the specific times for Saturday and Sunday in downtown Eau Claire?
This Saturday, 8 p.m. is the first screening. We are excited to say that it's sold out, the big room at the Budget Theater. But there are still tickets available for the matinee January 28th, Sunday, at 3 p.m.
Red carpet, the whole thing? Limos?
What? Oh, you know, I wish. I don't know that we got a red carpet.
Ben's got a really fly suit, though.
Yeah, I bought a suit.
Yeah, I could be the media guy interviewing all the people coming down the carpet.
Oh, Al, we would love that.
Al, you got to be there.
E.T., Entertainment Tonight.
Oh, yeah.
It's exciting talking to you because I love talking to young people who are doing what they love. It's obvious you're doing that. Keep having fun. You better keep us posted here at WPR as to the kind of stuff you're doing, because eventually that big premiere will come. I mean, maybe you don't even want that. Yeah, some of the stuff we've talked about, tongue in cheek, who knows?
Yeah. Well, we're big fans of you guys at WPR, so we appreciate it.
Thanks for moving up on a snowstormy day. I got to go shovel. Mac Hastings, Ben Krybik, keep in touch with us.
You betcha, Al. Thank you so much.
Happy shoveling.
You know, I think we of some extended experience should periodically subject ourselves to that kind of energy, simply in the hope that some of it rubs off and we maintain wild rather than mild expectations for tomorrow, too. Fragments at a theater near you, especially if you live near Eau Claire. Stay tuned. Reminders, don't forget Incandescence, the modern dance performance, happens Friday evening at Forge. Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts Menominee presents Winston Churchill, The Blitz, Friday evening, and the Sights and Sounds of Pink Floyd, a tribute to Run Like Hell, Saturday at 7:30. We have a new promotional intern. Her name is Hannah. We thank her for her work this week. Also, Kate and Dean for providing more parts of the foundation. Next week, Will Denson's new book about the history of summer theater in Eau Claire, and more. Always more. See you then. Bye.